I believe every one of you is going to fall in love with Reverend Judy Winkler.
Well, I hope that your hearing is a little better than mine, because if I was sitting in the back row and you were talking, I wouldn't be able to hear you. So we'll hope that you all hear very well. Okay. As Reverend Millie said, we did have a meeting together. We met at a coffee shop and shared a lovely, lovely time. We shared some coffee and a bagel, and we spoke about a number of things. And she asked me if I would speak to you tonight. This was back in January, and I said, of course. And being a retired minister, I figured I had tons and tons of sermons in my memory bank, and I thought, I'll just pull one out, nothing to it. Well, January slipped by, and then February slipped by, and here it was the very end of February, and I said, I don't have a talk for Wednesday. And I recognized that I was preoccupied with the fact that my very best friend was ill and going to die. So my friend Jerry was in the hospital off and on for 4 months since Thanksgiving. And she went through what I will call a huge amount of suffering. And during that time, she was in intensive care most of the time, and I could not see her. And every day I would call for a report and see how she was doing. So I knew that my mind wasn't on talking to you tonight, but I gave myself permission to just be where I was. And she did cross over to the other side, and her funeral was last Friday. So I thought what I would do is talk to you a little bit about her, a little bit about my experience, and I invite you to consider two things that I want to share with you tonight. One is the idea that we can develop qualities in ourselves that we admire and appreciate in other people. And the other one I'll tell you in just a minute. Jerry's funeral was at a church that was packed. There was standing room only. And everybody there, I'm sure, thought like I did, that was my best friend. We all thought she was our very best friend. She was very active in her congregation. And she was the kind of person who was there before you even knew that you needed her. When I had hip surgery, she insisted on coming to my house for 7 days in a row to cook lunch and dinner for me. I'm a very independent person, and I didn't need the help, and I had everything planned. But she really twisted my arm. She insisted. And it was the most wonderful help I'd had. I didn't ask for it, didn't want it, but she was there, and that's the kind of person that she was. She always advised me on every big decision I made. I never bought a house or a car or a big appliance without calling her, because she was a money person and she knew finances intimately. She would be what I would call a Christian, in every sense of the word. She was non-judgmental, loving, very generous, kind, helpful, always problem-solved for everybody, and she used her gifts and talents to serve. In the 30 years that I knew her, I never heard her say a cross word to anybody, and I never heard her say anything negative about anybody, including her husband of 59 and a half years. Now that's what I call a Christian. Even though Jerry was only 7 years older than I, she had all the qualities that I wanted in a mother. You know, everybody has their ideal of the perfect mother. And she was compassionate and tender. She always smelled delicious. She was very accepting and encouraging. And she was physically there when I needed her. She was the kind of friend that you call loyal. She told me one time about a mutual friend of ours who had borrowed some of her very expensive sterling silver serviceware for a party, and the woman had never returned it. And I asked her, did so-and-so ever return all of your place settings? And she said, no, she hadn't. And I said, well? And she said, you know, my friendship with her is more important than the sterling silver. Now, I'm not sure I'd be as big as she was or as forgiving, because I'm still attached to the belief that we're supposed to do the right thing at the right time for the right reason. But that's another talk. So at the gathering after the funeral, we all went to a social hall. And I had a very unusual experience, and you might have had this too. I felt like I was living in two worlds at the same time. The place settings were lovely, with the centerpieces and all that kind of thing. And there was lots of food and lots to drink, and everything was just a beautiful setting. It was very lovely to look at. And the world I was in was visiting, I was present, I was talking with friends and family and explaining how I felt and asking how they were and checking with family. And I was totally there. And the other part of me was in this strange world where I felt Jerry should be there. She was the only person missing at this fabulous gala affair, and she should be there introducing everybody and making sure everybody was comfortable and knew everybody and had enough to eat and drink, and everything was just beautifully done, and she wasn't there. And it was kind of, I'll call it a little crazy making, because I wasn't used to that experience. So on the way home, I said to the friend who was driving, you know, I'm thinking about some of the qualities that I love so much about Jerry. And I think that I want to develop in myself some of these qualities, not to be another Jerry, but to be more of myself, because I think God made us as individuals to develop each of our talents and qualities. So when I got home from the funeral, I'll admit to you that I slipped into a depression, which is very unlike me. I'm usually, you know, cheerful and balanced and this and that. And I just sat. I didn't do the dishes. I didn't clean the house. I wore the same clothes for 2 days. I mean, it was like shocking to me to observe myself. And after 2 days, I got up the third day and I looked at myself and I said, pull it together here. You've got things to do, people to see, places to go. And I washed the dishes and tidied up the house. And I thought that during that time that I was just sitting, I had reflected not only on Jerry's life, but I kind of done a scan of my own life and saw her qualities and saw my qualities. And I made a conscious decision that I wanted to develop a couple of those qualities. One of the things that I said was that if I develop some of these qualities, perhaps my life will be as enriched as hers was. And I decided to be more available and more present to people. My daughter just moved back to San Diego, and she asked her sister, her dad, and me to go look at this prospective home she was going to rent. And I said, no, I'm busy. Take your sister and your dad and just tell me about it. I wasn't present for her when she needed me. And I had to call her on the phone and apologize for not being there when she wanted me to be there. My excuse was, well, other people can give you their opinion, you don't need mine. But she asked for my opinion. She needed me to support her there, and I wasn't there. So I apologized, and I said to her, if you ask me again to do something, and I say, no, I'm not going to do it, remind me of this incident so I can stand up and be present for you, because I want to be there for you physically. So the first idea that I wanted to share with you was to find, if you find yourself missing someone, begin to embody and develop the qualities that you appreciated in him or her. And if there's someone that you admire, identify what quality in yourself that you want to deepen. not to be like them, but to enrich yourself. You'll become more of the person that God intended you to be, and I know that you'll shine. The second idea that I want to share with you is this. Become what you most wanted and did not receive in childhood. Does that make sense? Okay. As an example, Jerry told me when she was little, she always felt ignored and left out. She had two very handsome brothers, and friends always came over to play with the brothers, and she was like the ugly duckling that just kind of hung. And as an adult, she made sure that nobody ever felt left out. She was sure to introduce everybody, make everybody feel comfortable, and she had a special way of making people feel important. And I thought it was a Midwest thing. She always loved people to drop in without calling. She loved surprise visits. And when we showed up, she always made us feel like she had been waiting for us all day, like we were the honored guests that had just come. It was quite a quality. I'd love to develop more, like, be more like that. Her childhood also was filled with poverty. She had to start working very early, and she put herself through school to learn to be an accountant and a bookkeeper. And she was a wizard in financial matters. She knew all about real estate taxes and mortgages and laws and all of that kind of stuff. And she was the one who not only told me to buy a house, she took me to look for a house, she found a real estate agent, she found a broker, she negotiated the price, and then 13 years later when I sold it, she was there to negotiate a fair selling price. And she was just there when I needed her for things that I didn't know how to do, I didn't feel comfortable. So she certainly used her gifts in that way. So she used the two things that she yearned for as a child, to feel included and to have financial security. And she made those part of her own life's purpose to bless others with those gifts by making others feel wanted and helping us all with our financial problems. In my own childhood, I didn't feel safe with the people closest to me. And as an adult, I've noticed that I help other people feel safe because they can depend on me. I'm trustworthy and honorable, and people rely on me. And like some of you, I was dyslexic, so learning was a real challenge for me, and as a result, I turned into an excellent teacher, if I say so myself. And I think what's happened is I became the kind of teacher that I always wanted. Bless you. 5 years ago, I focused on becoming more compassionate. So I took a course that was designed by Dr. Marshall Rosenberg, Nonviolent Communication. Have you all heard about that one? Oh, well, it was the most difficult course I ever took, and I struggled to understand the concept and the model, and every week I kept saying, I don't get it, I don't get it. And after the 12 weeks, I walked away saying, I really don't get it. Somehow, some of it slipped in, but basically, I felt like I was taking a foreign language and I missed the basics of the language. I just totally missed it. It theoretically talks about changing the way you communicate from being a jackal, which is the animal that attacks and is defensive all the time. You know those kind of people who are defensive and attack all the time like a jackal? To move into being a giraffe. And a giraffe is, as you know, the land mammal that has the biggest heart because it has to pump blood up the neck. So in order to switch from being a jackal to a giraffe, you have to learn to not be defensive and not attack, but to speak and choose words and have the intention of speaking with love. About a month ago, I finished teaching a class called Self-Mastery, and the students wanted more. The class was over, and they wanted more, and I thought, what can I give them that will really support them in the self-mastery? And I thought, compassionate communication. And I brought out my old book and I went, I didn't get it, but I have to get it now in order to teach. So I thought about it and thought about it, and I found ways that I thought might work. So the first night they came, I confessed to them that I was a terrible student. It was an awful class, and I thought I'd never get through it. But I told them, I promise you I will do everything I can to make it easier for you than it was for me. And the first night, I almost fell off my chair because every student got it. They got the model. They got the theory. They got the concept. And my